Hello and welcome to the State of Salesforce Implementations, which is a series of sessions that we're going to have with experts in the Salesforce ecosystem to learn more about where we are in the Salesforce ecosystem. That's what I think. Current, future, and maybe a bit of past as well. My name is Francis Pinder, and I'm founder of admin2architect.com, where I train up the next generation of Salesforce admins and developers to be architects. And if you want to find out if you have what it takes to be a Salesforce architect, then head to admin2architect.com/scorecard. Also, I run Salesforce Posse podcast. I'm a Salesforce MVP Hall of Famer, and I've been working in the Salesforce ecosystem for 14 years, 13 years, something like that. Kind of lost count. And with me on all these sessions that we're going to have over the next couple of weeks is
Christian Jorgensen. Hello, everyone. I am a Salesforce solution architect at Wake, an IBM company. I advise and challenge organizations on planning, orchestrating, and scaling their Salesforce programs and implementations. I'm also the author of the Salesforce End-to-End Implementation Handbook. And with me is Ines. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, Ines Garcia over here. An Agile coach, Salesforce MVP, Hall of Fame, and more than 20 certifications and counting. And you may have seen some of my courses, read some of my books, and really keen to share with others that there is a better way. I mean, 14 years, 10 years, 15 years, actually the ecosystem has been going on for over 2 decades. So there is a lot to unpeel. So yeah, speak with me about Agile, Salesforce, and everything in between.
And finally, I guess there's me. So my name is Lars Malmqvist. I'm a Salesforce CTA and a partner at Implement Consulting Group. I've been working in the Salesforce ecosystem for the past 14 years now. I'm also the author of 2 books, one on Salesforce anti-patterns and one on architecting AI solutions on Salesforce. And I think we've got an exciting series of podcasts lined up where we cover some of the key aspects of what it means to run a successful Salesforce implementation.
Yeah, and I think because it's changed, right?
It has changed, yes.
Yeah. And I kind of think that, yeah, it's kind of like over the years, you had all those greenfield projects early on and it was like bash them out, bang, bang, bang. And now we're hitting this maturity, right? Where everything's just getting a bit harder and everything else. I think, you know, that's my opinion.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that statement. Right. You know, like the tradition in the Salesforce partner ecosystem has been, you know, we do the implementation, then we move on to the next implementation. Yeah. Right. And now you've got these big companies and they're basically relying on Salesforce as one of their critical line of business systems that really do the core work of the company, which means that you also have a completely different mindset, right? It's something that evolves continuously. It's something that requires good governance. It's something that requires good processes. It's something that, you know, you're not just there to sort of add the next feature license and then move on anymore, right? It's about how do we really get value? How do we get adoption? All of these things, I think, are crucial now.
Yeah, it's actually almost the moment you said that, I went back to that, you know, the no software signs that Salesforce used to have, right? It's almost like that's gone full circle, right? We're now having to think about DevOps, Salesforce processes, and you know, but yeah,
but I mean, you know, it is software, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly. I mean some like that, I guess people for many years thought that no code or low code meant that you didn't need the same level of technical process and discipline that you have with traditional software engineering. And that's obviously been proven false, right? You build up lots of stuff with declarative tools, you know, a complex data model, complex validations, complex flows. Even if you don't have a big code base, and obviously some Salesforce customers do have a big code base, but even if you don't, you still run into all of the complexity over time. Yeah. Like the essential complexity doesn't go away.
Yeah, even if you go declarative, I've found horrific orgs that have gone 100% declarative. You're like, oh my word, if only they had just a little bit of code to do that they're trying to do, right?
Absolutely.
So what about you guys, Innocent? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you were saying we go all full circle as well, for me, yeah. It's like we go full circle also to customers, where you may have been part of the implementation, many things have happened in between, you come back and you're like, oi, and what is this? And some of those processes and things that matters, like documentation, right, are worth, you know, your future self or your past self is like, why you didn't do this? So there are things that matters, and I'm quite excited to see all this bunch of practitioners that we have lined up to speak over the next few weeks, right? Our guests have been in and out and about the arena, and you know, it's going to be, I hope, very insightful exploration series where we have prepared. Also the name of the State of Salesforce Implementations, and that being SOS for a reason.
Absolutely. Great point. I'm very excited also to hear about the talk about data management, analytics, and AI, and because it really touches upon something that's really, let's say, a hype, or rather seems like the great anticipation for the next generation of AI capabilities on the platform, and whether the great expectations will be fulfilled and what their take is on it, right? I also think the expectations in the ecosystem from organizations implementing Salesforce has risen over the last few years. Salesforce being promoted as a low-code, no-code platform. The expectations on how we deliver, how DevOps capabilities support that model. And then I think organizations are really realizing that data management and governance is really key for anything they want to do on the platform to realize value in the end. So I'm very excited to hear about all those different topics and more that we have lined up.
Yeah, and I think like especially around that scaling piece, right, where you know you're scaling into multiple teams always working on the same environment and or same environments. Production environment and how do you manage that and how do you scale that and but yeah, it's gonna be, yeah, it's full pack. We got, what is it, 7-8 sessions, something like that, over the next couple of weeks. So yeah, it's gonna be quite an exciting ride, I feel.
I think you're right in your observation that, I mean, like, we used to have relatively limited Salesforce implementations, right? We used to have, you know, we're doing Sales Cloud, we're doing Service Cloud, we're doing I guess at least at the upper end of the market, those days are gone, right? Now we are working across clouds, across products. Often, you know, something is on platform, something is off platform. Even if it's on platform, it's not necessarily the native Salesforce product. It might be something from the AppExchange or something that you build yourself. So just the number of moving parts and the sheer complexity of these things is just has exploded over the past few years, I think.
Key as well, you know, that whole, we want to learn now from what's going in and what's coming out and how we can improve and what's going wrong. And that whole piece as well is kind of, yeah.
It makes it really interesting. It's not to put anybody off. Like, if you are early days, maybe thinking about coming into the ecosystem or whatever it is, tap into your existing potential, tap into your skills, because the good news is that there is a space for everybody. The thing is that it's not just one product, it's multiple product families which are their own architecture and applications and whatever else, right? So there is space, there is opportunities, and the good things is that this is growing in a way very organically, I think, that there is space and needed skills. So if you're thinking, please come over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As well, it's not just also the Salesforce, you know, people wanting those more niche industry skills as well, aligned with Salesforce and knowing the kind of the problem domain of that particular industry and how you solve solutions using the Salesforce toolbox, basically. So, yeah, I think it's definitely, I don't know, do you think that it is going to go a bit more niched down, i.e. I am a, you know, the platform's so big that you get less generalists. It's now I'm an architect or an admin that is expert in marketing cloud in this industry.
I actually think it's going to get that narrow, right? I mean, I remember 10 years ago, I wanted to know the entire platform. I wanted to know everything. I wanted to be able to do everything. And you could do it. It was work, but you could do it. Like, today, I don't think anybody can. Even like, you can have a cursory, you know, overview of the different products, but you genuinely can't have specialist knowledge across things. It's too big to know, right?
Yeah.
And that by necessity drives that level of specialization. And again, you know, because it becomes more industry focused, we're seeing huge growth in industry clouds because it becomes more multi-platform, right? The different products are built on different core technologies. Just by necessity, you are going to have to specialize, right? But you know, there's still lots of good entry points, right? There's just a ton of opportunity in the ecosystem. So you can come in from the business analysis side if you've got the business skills and the industry skills. You can come in from the admin side and learn how to do the configuration and then move on to other roles from there, right? That's sort of the great thing about admins is they can become 100 things afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Or if you've got development skills on a different platform, you can move into the Salesforce space sort of vertically in that space. Because, I mean, again, yeah, there's a lot more call for different programming languages around Salesforce than there used to be. So I think actually, yeah, more specialized, but not necessarily any less opportunities for anybody who wants to engage.
I mean, absolutely. I'm a generalist and I like it, right? I don't have, and I think everybody have certain things that you are geared more towards. And yes, you may be specialized on those, but you don't feel that it needs to be all or nothing or only this thing. And then you're pigeonholed in a box. You know, I have problems with boxes. I want to be free. And this idea of cross-cloud. And you can see, I think for me, working as an independent contractor, you work with multiple different industries, multiple different teams and size, from startups to, you know, one of the biggest utilities company here in the UK. And you see patterns. Yes, everybody's unique. Everybody have their own context. But, you know, this problem that is so unique to you is also very similar here. Yeah.
I never forget. I worked for a film post-production company, right? And it was like totally different to, you know, CRM and other companies and stuff like this, but they had what they call the film pipeline, right? And you know, all the shots were on the walls and you could see the progression of the shot going from a wireframe to a, you know, fully finished. And they had in the evening rushes of what they did and stuff like this, and I'm like, this is agile just in another name, right? It was exactly the same. They called it a completely different thing, right? But they were solving the same problems basically. But you know, in the film industry. So I think there's so many, yeah, different patterns. And yeah, I totally, yeah. Like when I chatted with you this, it's like, you know, they're putting people in a box. It doesn't work, right? I think. And so do you think, because I, yeah, even saying like niching down, it's still, you've got this multifunctional team that are, you know, they're not just a BA, right? You're not just a, you know, a consultant or an architect. You're doing all kinds of different things, I think. And I think those teams work really well, right? When they've got the right, it's not just completely siloed BA, siloed architect, and that's it. They understand their own kind of each other's domains almost, and know how to pass information to each other in a meaningful way. And yeah. So you're not just, yeah, all one thing.
I think that's a great point, right? Because regardless of whether the platform is becoming more diverse or you have to have more niche skills to be an expert in any one field or cloud or what have you, I think still if you are someone who is really great at having the overall picture in terms of how do we deliver in a continuous way or in a more project-like mode, how do you bring it together? How do you become more of a product organization? And what does it take? And what are the principles behind? Those are things that go across, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's definitely a space and need for people who have those skills. And some of them are very much represented here and are also invited to the upcoming episodes, right? To talk more about their view on that and how it relates to Salesforce, because that's really what we're talking about in this whole series, right?
Pause. Tumbleweed.
Yeah,
tumbleweed. Should we have a look at what? So what we do? We did.
Well, 15 minutes. That's not enough.
No. Okay, why don't we go into the world of DevOps a bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the platform. So. Okay, so the world of Salesforce DevOps, I feel, has kind of grown up as well over the last, you know, well, 5 years, 10 years. And I think it's always been a bit of the weird, It's everybody suddenly realized they need DevOps almost, I think. But the ecosystem is like, there's so many applications out there that can help you or not. And I just wanted, you know, what's your take on how that's evolving and where we're going to end up? Because you've got Salesforce bringing stuff out. We've got other partners with stuff, third-party tools, all kinds of stuff.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here and say that Salesforce historically has had pretty weak DevOps support, right? It's not been a priority, right? The metadata API has been kind of the poor cousin of the other APIs. It hasn't really been a priority, right? That, you know, Salesforce didn't build any native tools other than change sets, and change sets are awful, right?
I use them every day. What is it?
So, I mean, I guess the positive spin on that is that enabled a huge flurry of, you know, really great companies like Copado, Gearset, AutoRabbit, so on and so forth, to build all of these, DevOps platforms that people then, you know, over time, they actually start to see the value, right? Mm-hmm. So they see, okay, fine, we reach a level of complexity, and then, okay, it makes sense to do source-based development, right? There is just so much we can manage in the org itself, or we need to move to package-based development if we want to distribute functionality across multiple orgs, or we want to compartmentalize the way we do development, and we want to adopt more modern architecture patterns, right? And all of that requires tool support. So, and that tool support has been forthcoming, right? And it's created some quite large and quite successful companies that have delivered really great products to the platform. And now, obviously, recently we've seen Salesforce sort of move in with DevOps Center and so on and so forth. I mean, it's hard at this point to see it as, you know, as competitive with the products out there, right? It isn't really at that level, but it is better than change sets, right?
Anything better than change sets.
So from that perspective, it's definitely a step up in the platform. I think it also sort of is a recognition from Salesforce's side that they have to provide some functionality in this space, because it is now becoming, you know, the default, right? Three, four years ago, you know, DevOps, no DevOps, that was kind of a real question when you were doing a project, right? These days, I don't think I would. It's been a while since I've seen a large scale implementation where there isn't some kind of DevOps pipeline involved.
And I think it's also this whole mentality of wanting to kind of shift left in quality, getting the quality early on, having the tools in place to do those kind of broad brush strokes, code analysis or declarative analysis of going, oh, you created a field called password. That's probably not a good idea because it sounds like you're going to put a password in it and stuff like this. To improve, you know, the quality of the implementation as well. So, yeah, it's kind of it's a fun space, but
I mean, I guess there's another sort of trend here where we're starting to see lots of effectively, you know, pseudo metadata in products like CPQ, right? Where you're basically you're doing data driven customization, but effectively it's metadata, and it really should be managed like metadata. And there has been no good solution for that, right?
It's basically a data migration through environments, right?
So you know, like you can use something like Protly, or you know, there's a new product out from Salto that can do it with CPQ, but it's still kind of like you've got all of this configuration that's actually business critical configuration, and it's not being managed in any reasonable way in many organizations, right? I've worked in one company where there was a big DevOps setup for all of the source code, and then the quote configuration plugin, the QCP that they use for calculating the prices at runtime in JavaScript, that was unmanaged altogether, right? All of that, you know, 1,000 lines of JavaScript code just lived as a record in an object, right? That's just not right.
But I think it's also like a little bit of the evolution of the platform, right? Where you've had these apps that have been around for a very long time where they didn't have, you know, the ability to use metadata for their own custom configurations, and they're having to use records. And then also now you've got CPQ, where it's so much data that's needed to manage it that They have to use, you know, objects. But
yeah.
It's
not the vendor's fault. It's just the implementation of the platform, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or when you start bringing other sort of applications into the mix, like Litmus or Zwora, or I don't want to say too many, but essentially, when you want to be moving across environments, it's fiddly. It's fiddly because certain data, it just, yeah.
You've got this whole concept of production changing, metadata changing under the hood, either by users creating list views or whatever it may be, or even Salesforce doing their releases, which now they're saying they're going to release, changing the release process rather than, and that's going to be like, what, our metadata is going to be changing anytime throughout the year, or not, maybe not.
And having a clarity as a team, right, of what are the things you're going to include in there or not, and just live with it, and that's okay. Because over tight control or hierarchies, it doesn't enable you to move fast and evolve as is needed. I think for me, it's that balance of the speed and safety without adding wait time and bureaucracy, because we as a species tend to overdo it, overcomplicate things. So if you have clarity, even our processes as humans, it just can become overly done. And sometimes it's, less is more. It can really help everybody have a bit more joy.
Yeah, one of the sessions we've got is around, becoming a product organization, right? And I think we talk about that a bit. I think it was in that one where finding that balance of getting that value, right, of business value, linking what you're doing to the value of the organization, but also then having that balance of, well, actually, if the team knows this part of the system is like a tech debt beehive of craziness, and everything we keep changing is, this is getting more and more wobbly, then allowing them to have the power to, okay, we want to work on this sprint or whatever it may be.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be a really interesting talk, right? Because the concept of product organizations didn't really come from Salesforce. It's something that various partners and ecosystem players have sort of introduced and said, hey, there are some really good learnings in the whole product management and product-led organization principles that could be used. But then you see the clash between something that is more of a custom development tech methodology or principles, and then a SaaS and PaaS platform that already has something. So you're not really building everything from scratch, and rather you shouldn't. You should really see what can you leverage that is there out of the box and sort of carve out from what is already there. So I think that's where we typically see this clash between how much architecture and definitions up front before we start developing, or do we just go ahead and then live with the risk of something being not really aligned? I think that's probably one of the major talks and conversations going on in the ecosystem at the moment. What do you think?
I think also the ability for us to validate that value, right? Because from the far removed from my cognitive power, I think this is a great idea. We must do this. It's going to add tons of value. But how are we going to quickly measure if that's the case? And what's the very least thing I can throw out there and see if it works? If it sticks, great. Let's do a bit more. But otherwise, you can chuck a lot of time and effort into something. And then down the line, you look, wow, actually, all our effort of this queue, it didn't turn into all those mega sales that we imagine from our far removed boardroom. And so how can we build telemetrics? I'm very interested to find out, from product perspective, how you look at your portfolio, how you manage that portfolio so that you know if those things in fact are adding the impact that you guessed.
Yeah, which then all does full circle background to the data and learning from the data, right? Data becoming more important in the ecosystem as well.
But it's an interesting thing, because we've always been selling Salesforce on the basis of time to value, right? That's one of the key reasons why people buy Salesforce, is they can get something out there quickly and it can generate value. I mean, at least if they've predicted correctly what is going to generate value, which is, not always the case, to be sure. But then all of this new complexity in the environment, the complexity of running multi-cloud programs, the complexity of DevOps pipelines, the complexity of technical governance around a big platform, you know, it creates not necessarily a roadblock, but some different ways that you need to think about how you then maintain that agility and that that ability to use the platform to get value out there quickly, which I think is a sort of an interesting aspect, again, in terms of how Salesforce implementations have changed.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's the shifting dynamics, right? What is really happening in the today? The common challenges, I think we're going to find stories that we can empathize. We've seen things similar. We're probably living something like, you know, they may tell us about. Is that evolution of enterprise architecture? Is also how you structure not only your application, but the data around it. What happens? How long you keep it and all that jazz? What are the key pain points? I think a lot of those are human related, right? We talk a lot about technology, but who is using it after all and how we organize ourselves matters, so that we can, you know, move from driving change to thriving through change, perhaps.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, and even like, yeah, that people thing of people doing things in different ways over time. And if you've had that Salesforce org for 10 years, you've had different people implementing in different ways in the same way that they've chosen which user stories and what things to do, right? So, yeah.
But I mean, I guess change management is another topic that we'll touch on over the course of this series, right? And I think, again, historically, because we've had this bias towards like just getting the implementation done, getting the functionality out there, perhaps, you know, it has not always had that higher priority, this actually making change happen in Salesforce organizations. And I mean, if you look at some of the analyst reports, right? It's the, like, one of the things that does get, you know, highlighted as a small negative is that there are lots of organizations that especially, you know, have salespeople and things like that, that have not necessarily adopted the system at the level where you would have had hoped, right? So, like, and I mean, that's a genuine shame, right? If you end up with going from an old CRM that you didn't like to Salesforce, but you still don't like it, and you still only do your CRM updates on Friday afternoon because your boss tells you, then it's not a huge success, right? It, you know, management might get better reports, but
do you think that's down to them not knowing the art of the possible in Salesforce, and it's just same old, or something else?
Maybe. I think it. Go ahead.
No, maybe it's not bringing people along. We just tend to think of all these things, great ideas, a little echo chamber. Yeah, we're going to do this. Yeah. This feature is going to be amazing, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then we check it to them and hope for the best.
And then move on to the next one and don't understand if it was good or not.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah. Okay, literally, you go and you do something that you think is really cool functionality, but you haven't actually validated with the salespeople or the service people. Is this what's going to actually add value to your day job, right? You haven't brought them along. You haven't given them the proper training. You haven't made them understand why it's a good value proposition for them, right? So if you don't explain to people what's in it for them, you know, why would they adopt other than because my boss tells me to?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's also part of, you have something out of the box already. So leverage as much as that as you can also to keep the cost low. So it's a matter of both changing slightly the organization or more radically, if that's the ambition of the organization, right? The way people work, the processes, but then also changing Salesforce because that's the implementation bit, right? So I think it's a balance. And I think this is saying that if you bring in more lift and shift, then you will just have expensive new processes expensive old processes in new fancy tech, which is just expensive and doesn't give you a lot of value, right?
Yeah, especially because in Salesforce, you can't really like lift and shift because there are some decisions that are embedded into the platform that you just purchased. So that in itself is going to be a lot of trouble.
Some developers are trying to really, really work to get it in, right?
Yeah.
Which again is another problem, right?
I mean, lift and shift with Salesforce is a recipe for disaster. I have done a few and it is not great.
Is this idea, I guess, of Sometimes we think about these things really far removed, but if you want to become fit or something like that, how does it work? Start 1st of January, sort of things you want to achieve in the year, and okay,
that's
you start
me you're
them.
Describing there. Yeah.
Lot of exercise for a very short amount of time, and then it doesn't stick. So come in the world of tiny habits on change of how can we make something smooth transition to just stick it into your current habits and become better, and the whole thing becomes better. Otherwise, you do lots out of the sudden, and that change is just not going to stick.
Embedding the habits. Yeah, actually, I saw a video of, I think it was from a Marine or something like this, where he just, you know, it's like making your bed in the first thing in the morning is the first task, the first habit. And then you kind of build from there, you know, each of the habits to kind of keep, you know, yeah, to achieve. But yeah, I've got it somewhere. I got a, I work in a 13-week kind of cycle. And I kind of set kind of three goals for those 13 weeks. And then, you know, we, you know, kind of groups, group goals, and then kind of, yeah, plan the week and see what I'm going to achieve to those goals. Here it is. I go old school and then use a book. But yeah, it works for me.
Cool.
Yeah, there's this idea of like, what are your time boxes, right? You have four a year. What does it compose, which will also include you having time off? I'm sure with kids, some of that is governed by somebody else. And how you have those big rocks of delivery throughout the rhythm of your life, right? And what are the different things you can do, and things will change, and you will, you know, the direction may evolve, the journey will...
Write a book. That's all you guys have done it, right? Although I have no idea what I would talk about. But
I mean, you can publish your notes.
True, yeah, that's it. I'll just publish this. There we go, job done.
Anyway, so on this series, right, we are talking about architecture, and we're talking about Agile, we're talking about DevOps and change and governance and product portfolio management, analytics, of course, AI. So do please join us as we sort of unpick all this state of affairs of strategies that is going to help us and help you, hopefully, how you can get the most of all this technology and ecosystem. And really moving from theory into action, right? And we're going to do through narrative and stories. I think that's super powerful, through other people's experiences. We don't have enough time to learn them all by ourselves, so our guests will help us to do that.
In their own world. So yeah, I'm really excited. It's going to be fun. Okay, so if you are interested in listening to the sessions, you can sign up to an email where we'll get notify you when the sessions are on. All you have to do is head to admin2architect.com/SOS.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for that, Francis. And I would just want to remind everyone here to bring your friend, your colleague, anyone who you think would also be interested in being part and participating in these sessions.
Brilliant. Thanks, everybody, for being watching so far right to the end of the video, and hopefully see you in the next session. So long.